if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 172. This is our 2021 Dubai Duty Free Irish Open and Rocket Mortgage Classic Tips and Selections podcast. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamper, to discuss this week's European and PGA Tour golf action. Good morning, gents.
Morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more info. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews. Masses of tournament statistics, including strokes gained these days, and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge with no paywall. It's all completely free at Golf Betting System. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We're available on social media. Barry is now above 2,000 followers. So thank you for that, listeners.
Thanks, everybody.
He's available at... It was good, wasn't it? See, we asked, and what are you up to now?
Over 2,000. I'm just trying to figure out what else we can get by asking. Could be good, like just maybe
contributions for mortgages, something like that. I don't know. Yeah.
Free beer, free rounds of golf. I don't know. Just bags of money.
Go on, is it Patriarch and start?
Patriarchs, yeah. Patreon, yeah. Yeah.
Patreon, I don't know.
Yeah, Steve, I don't think anybody wants to see us naked. Like, so that's, yeah, maybe, cats maybe can that idea.
Isn't there that thing called Cameo where people can request messages from individuals?
Yeah, again, we'd have to pay the listeners to be able to Cameo for them. Come on. So,
different revenue streams. So, anyway, back to Barry's handle is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting, and I'm at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. When you actually come to join the Facebook group, there are two qualifying questions that you need to answer before we let you in. So just bear that in mind. Answer them. Please look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Please subscribe and like the shows. And of course, we are always on the hunt for five-star Apple podcast reviews. Those are the podcast currency. And basically, the more five-star reviews you get, the more coverage you get on Apple podcasts and iTunes. Now, I have none to read this week. So, we've got United States, 121 reviews from the US, 116 from the UK, and 27 from Ireland. So, if you are in Ireland or the United Kingdom and you enjoy the podcast, could you please spend a couple of minutes giving us a five-star review? I will read it out at the start of next week's show, which will be the Scottish Open and John Deere Classic show. And it would be very much appreciated. Okay. Oh, dear. Sometimes these reviews, well, in fact, it tends to be most weeks, but last week was just unbelievable. The Facebook group lit up when Bubba did a Bubba coming down the stretch at the Travelers last week. It was, yeah.
It wasn't just Bubba either, was it? There were well, and from your own personal pain perspective with Russell Henley, Steve, but a few players throwing that lead around like a hot potato as it came down the stretch. It's entertaining, I suppose, is one way to describe it. Unless you're one of the players who's throwing away a golden chance of winning a golf tournament. I was surprised with Bubba. He hit odds on, which you'd expect given the position he was in and given his previous around the track, and just bogeyed or double bogeyed his way in and threw that away. And from your perspective, Russell Henley, he was right in the mix as well until he started throwing doubles in like confetti as well, didn't he?
Henley, yeah. He was two off the lead. And you're thinking to yourself, well, I'll take the each way at 55s. And then he got to the driver ball, was it 14th? Clearly didn't want to bang it on the water in the left, so hit it about 150 yards right. And Barry did say to me on Skype yesterday, he said, that Russell Henley, he can be a little bit sketchy coming down the stretch. And that's another one for, I mean, it's, how many could you say in this week's field at the Rocket Mortgage are absolutely cast iron in contention? Probably they're not money. This is the trouble most weeks, isn't it? That tournament, though, you just look at, I mean, it's all just for reference rather than to do anything. Bubba won in 2010, six back on Sunday. Leishman, six back. Ken Duke, two back. Streelman was four back. Bubba in 2015 was a shot back. Knox was three back. It just, Bubba in 2018 when we were on him, six back he was when he won that. And Dustin Johnson, 2020, was two back. Leaders, very, well, it's difficult to convert that, Travellers, when you're in the lead. And there, Harris English, he probably would have been, what, four back, I would say, starting Sunday.
Yeah, well, Leishman was you know, at one point,
Leishman, when everyone was, he came from nowhere, did he?
Six under final round, but at one point, as everyone started to disintegrate, there was a chance that his 12 under number was going to hold up. And
so, well, he was in a playoff, wasn't he? Unless, you know, until English made that birdie on 18.
Yeah.
English was in sixth spot starting that round on Sunday. So I would assume he was, let's just have a quick look, shall we? Why not? I would assume he was about three or four back. English was two back. Leishman was four back. I suppose this was it. It was such a congested leaderboard, wasn't it? Was it something like 28 within four shots or something?
Yeah. And you go out and you can if you post a score, then it can cause some of the players a bit of a challenge as they're coming in. Even though some of those holes are quite attackable, as we saw, the mistakes are there to be made, aren't they?
That's English's second victory 2021, and he's now up to eighth place in terms of Ryder Cup qualification. That's kind of when you're forcing the issue there, isn't it? Because they're taking the Stricker's having to, clearly he takes six automatically, and he's got six captain's picks. But if you've got a player like Harris English sitting there in eighth spot come the end of the year, it'd be hard to say, well, no, Harris isn't in. I'm going to put X, Y, and Z, Phil Mickelson, and a few others in there just because I fancy them over Harris.
Yeah, be a bit harsh, wouldn't it? But then that's the nature of the setup for the Americans this year.
The playoff was harsh. I lasted four holes and I had to just go to bed. I'm thinking I just got to get up at whatever time in the morning. 3 hours sleep isn't going to crack it. They went to the eighth playoff hole, wasn't it? Eight they did.
Yeah.
Did you stay up till the end, Baron?
Not at all. I passed out.
Well, that's just the wine, isn't it?
Just a bit of golf over the weekend, yeah.
So did you wake up at 3 in the morning and it finished and it was the women's PGA on the screen? Or?
No. I've slept right through peacefully. So, no, three rounds of golf over the weekend. So it's just getting my Sunday nap in late. So, yeah, two wins for English. I mean, it's quite a compelling argument to get a pick.
Yeah, I think so. You could kind of see it coming as well, couldn't you? Another one where I'm slapping myself around the head after you miss it. But he got into contention at Palmetto, fell away. He then finished like an absolute Trojan at the US Open, didn't he? And grabbed a third place, back door. So he was clearly playing some nice golf. So yeah, he comes and takes the victory. Kramer Hickok was the other playoff. Nice to see Kramer. His numbers, Hickok, always look good, Hickok's numbers. Great drive of the ball, very accurate off the tee, pretty long. The other thing that I think was noticeable, one that listeners should take a note of, that was gusting 25 miles an hour on Sunday. And when I look at English and when I look at predictor model numbers, he's a decent wind player, Harris English. You look at Bubba Watson on the same stats over the last 5 years. Bubba Watson is a terrible wind blower. And he just fell away. Now, I'm not saying that's the only reason Bubba fell away, but, you know, these things... We did know that that was going to be windy on the Sunday, that forecast came through. Brian Harman was up there. Harman's a great wind player. Kisner's a good wind player. Finished like a Trojan, 63. Koepka, decent in the wind. That, all high on the stats. Abraham Anser made me laugh again. Absolutely made me die. Tipped up beyond belief. Everyone was on him. Throws in a 2-over-72 just to take himself out of contention first Thursday. And then, of course, what does Abraham Anser do? 66, 66, 65 when he knows he can't win. Finishes fourth. He's just like a money machine, isn't he? That never wins. It's unbelievable, Abe Anser.
The modern day Charles Held III.
He is, yeah. He'll be going off at 20 to 1 in his next tournament, Abe Anser. He's CH3, isn't he? I'm trying to think of other ones. Bo Van Pelt in his prime used to kind of do stuff like this all the time. Was in the top 50 in the world.
Yeah.
Players that never win, but like ranked in the top 20 in the world.
Just keep getting those checks, don't they? Keep getting those decent places.
Huge holes of world qualifying pot spots.
Mm.
Europe. Victor Hovland was breaking records.
Yeah. Yeah,
you hate tournaments where short prices win, don't you, Paul? It just destroys your MO completely.
It's frustrating on the European Tour because you get these events where players come over who are predominantly either better players or PGA Tour players. They're silly short prices. And you've got to take a view. You either back them and be done with it, or you try and build a case and hope they don't. And Hovland was just too good in the end. And, you could have took a chance on him. He'd withdrawn from the US Open with that eye injury, but how serious was that? It was probably just precautionary, as we discussed on the pod last week. It just had a little bit too much for everyone else there. From my perspective, Bernd Wiesberger was the biggest opportunity, and he was favourite at various points during the course of the week. Played with Padraig Harrington, didn't he, the first 2 days?
Impressive.
He was, yeah. I'm sure he impressed the captain during the course of those two days, because he was right up there. He was hitting some really nice shots. He was playing some really nice golf, and then just kind of trod water over the weekend. As ever, it comes down to the finest of margins, doesn't it? From my perspective, a profit or a loss on the week came down to a 5-foot putt on the final hole, which, if he makes it, I get out of jail with a small profit. If he misses, then it's a 28-way cut for a tie for fifth place. And yeah, he missed it.
There were a lot of moans out there last week. Henley collapsed, Bubba collapsed. I had Guido who missed out on the each-way places at 100 to 1 by one shot. I had Daniel Van Tonder who finished 10th over in Germany. He was one shot off an each-way place. You had Bernd Wiesberger. And Pablo Larrazabal was right up there for most of the tournament.
He was, yeah. First couple of rounds, he was looking good as well. When you've invested in a player, you tend to follow him far more closely. And with Bernd Wiesberger, he had enough chances. He had enough makeable putts to have won that tournament by 4 or 5 shots. There was a stretch where he missed, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 putts from inside 10 feet in the space of, a dozen holes or so, that, you know, over the course of 2 days, over the weekend, that's the make or break for the tournament. And yeah.
What did you make of Keimer's charge?
Yeah, he's...
Because he played well at the US Open, didn't he, over the weekend? He charged at the US Open and took that forward in Germany.
Yeah, and again, it's only, you know, a couple of silly mistakes on the Saturday rather than the Sunday. He's very, very close, and you know, his age and his fitness, I think he's, if he does find that win, then he's got a bit more in the tank. I think he could go on and you know, do some damage over the next 5 or 10 years. He's just got to get over that line. And the longer it doesn't happen, and he's, you know, he's run into Hovland here this week, which was unfortunate in that respect. But yeah, he's had various other opportunities over the last year or so, and just hasn't quite managed to do it. But He probably will. I suspect he will. I suspect he's playing good enough golf that 1 week it will just all fall nicely for him. He'll get that win.
He'll win by five or six, like.
Yeah. And he'll probably follow it up very quickly with another win. And then, you know, he's back on the world stage and potentially competing and contending in WGCs and majors.
Can you imagine the sliding doors moment he had where he was leading by 10 going into, where was that in the Middle East?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that could be a thing that's like had a really long-term effect on the guy.
Mm. Yeah,
that, I'm sure stuff like that just does not leave you quickly. So, nice guy. Hopefully, he does get that win soon. It just kind of corrects course a little bit or erases the demons of that somewhat.
Yeah,
Does the course this week sort play to his strengths?
Difficult to tell, because we've seen so little of it over the last, since 2004, the last time it featured on any professional stage. So it feels to me, I'll go into it in a second, but it feels to me a bit more of a putters and a short game course than that. But we were talking off mic, and Barry's played it in the past, and we mentioned last week that Barry's playing it again in a week or so's time. And I guess your view is it may be a bit more about the long game than that.
Yeah, it's really hard to know. The weather is going to be very friendly this week. There's a possibility of some rain on Saturday, but overall not high winds, which is going to make it a bit easier to navigate around the tree-lined holes. It's been a long time since I played it, so it's hard to have a full reference in the head, and there's not a huge amount available online, even on their website. You know, just dotting around to try dig into it a bit further, but yeah, it's hard to be back in Keimer when he's seemingly having trouble getting the wins with a little bit of the chipping issues when he's 20-1.
Yeah, this is the problem, isn't it? But when he does win, it is likely to be at that kind of price, because he's been knocking on the door quite considerably over the last few months. But I don't know. Watching brief for me is the answer, Steve, I think.
Another thing of note for punters was it Tuesday night or Wednesday of last week? Bet365 just went top price on virtually the full field.
Yeah, on both events, yeah.
On both events.
Yeah, it's an interesting
start. That's one for listeners to keep a real close eye on.
Yeah, because they stick rigidly to their five places and a quarter of the odds, where, you know, last week in particular over in the US, most of the bookies had gone seven or eight or even 10 places last week. So five places and a quarter sticks out, you know, as being, you know, the outlier to those terms. So to counter that, there were some cracking prices available. And, you know, we've talked, you know, ad nauseum about the options you have about price over each way terms. And if you're a price junkie, then well worth keeping an eye on their terms or the prices over the next day or so on both events to see if we get something similar this week.
Let's see what they do. Let's see what they do this week, see if it's going to be a consistent thing. But it was very, very noticeable on Wednesday. Both events, Bet365, top price on virtually the full field. It was just, it was clear as clear could be what they were doing. So let's keep a close eye on that. Because, yeah, if you're a price hunter, that could be something to tap into on a Wednesday if Bet365 continue that. Right, let's talk. The biggest tournament of the week must be the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open on the European Tour. We have Rory McIlroy 11-2. Shane Lowry is a 14-1 shot in spots. Fleetwood at 18s. Kiama, as we were just talking about, 20-1. He's the same price as Christian Bezuidenhout. Robert McIntyre's WD. We've got Sam Horsfield at 25s. Lucas Herbert at 33s. And then 35-1 bar those. Ryan Fox and Andy Sullivan. So let me hand you over to Paul Williams to talk you through the Irish Open.
Yeah, decent enough field, isn't it?
Good field.
Lead up to the Open Championship, which we often see an improvement in the field quality.
The Scottish Open next week looks fantastic. You've got a load of American raiders coming over, haven't you?
Rahm, Thomas, Colin Morikawa in there. Morikawa's coming. Xander's coming.
Yeah.
Scotty Scheffler's coming over.
Yeah, that's right. Cracking field. Playing.
Till Hatton. There's a good field. And you sometimes, it depends on the way they've set these the schedule up, doesn't it? So when we've had a 3-week links swing where the Irish Open's been played on a genuine links track, then the Irish Open's been quite well attended by some of the top guys who want to play links for a week, have a week off, and then get over to the Open. And it isn't like that this week because we're playing Mount Juliet, which we'll get into in a second, which is a Parkland track. But it's still decent enough. As you just said, Rory headlining the field, 11-2. Larry at 12-1. So there's a couple of decent ex-winners at the top of the market. I guess, depending, again, how you see value, there's some different options available this week as well in terms of the bookies. Boyle Sports gone 10 places each way, fifth of the odds. Bet365, as we just discussed, is sticking rigidly to 5.25, so big differential there. In the middle somewhere, Coral are well worth taking a look at this week. 8 places each way on this event. They're 8 places each way on the Rocket Mortgage, which we'll cover in a little while, Steve. And until Wednesday night, so we're Tuesday morning here over in the UK, until midnight Wednesday, British summertime, they have an enhanced new customer offer, which is bet 5, get 30 in free bets, plus 30 free spins. Full T's and C's apply. The full T's and C's linked to the offer are on both mine and Steve's previews this week. So that expires on Wednesday evening. If you want a bit of 8 places each way action and an enhanced deal, then pop over to the site before Wednesday evening to grab that deal. Mount Juliet then, host course this week, a Jack Nicklaus design. It's a Parkland track, as we've described, tree-lined, 7,250-yard par 72. There's water on half of the holes, so there's trouble out there alongside the trees. The bent grass greens can get up to about 12 on the stimp. If you go back and read any of the past comments from some of the events, which I'll go through in a second, that have been held here over the last 20, 30 years, the greens tend to be what everyone's talking about, how good they are, the quality of the greens, the smoothness of the greens, the way they run, extremely true. So if you can start a putt online, it's very likely to hold its line. And I guess some of the players who enjoy that kind of setup, who really like to feel rewarded for a good putt, get on with it really quite well. In the past, it's hosted the WGC American Express, which was in 2002, won by Tiger Woods at 25 under. 2004 also won by Ernie Els at 18 under. They're the two most recent events held here. Prior to that, the Irish Open was hosted here between 1993 and 1995 in a similar kind of spot in the schedule. Those were won by Nick Faldo, Bernard Langer and Sam Torrance between 11 and 13 under. So if you're going back and studying those older events, you're not going to find a great deal of players in this week's field, unfortunately. But I guess those events do give us a little bit of a pointer, particularly those American Express WGC events, because there were some skill stats captured for those two events. And just to summarise where the differentials were, Tiger Woods was sixth for putting and first for scrambling on the week that he won at 25 under. Ernie Els was first for putting and first for scrambling also on the week that he won at 18 under. So in both instances, and that's not just the winners, if you go down the list of the players who are in contending positions, it was generally the short game and putting that there was a differential between contenders and non-contenders on the week. So that can kind of point you down that route, I guess. Ernie Els only made 3 bogeys during the course of the week. Tiger Woods made 1 bogey over four rounds when he was winning at 25 under. So making birdies, bogey avoidance seems to be quite critical. In if that's a guess, if we're playing in amenable conditions, which, as Barry alluded to a second ago, it appears to be the case. It looks like it's going to be quite nice this week in Southern Ireland. Low scoring, I'd imagine, with light winds, pleasant temperatures, maybe reaching the low 70s Fahrenheit, a little bit of wind, a little bit of rain potentially to soften the course at the start of the weekend, but nothing serious. So, yeah, I don't know. Gut feel for me, probably 18, maybe 22 under, something like that. What do you got a feel of the winning price, Barry? You reckon it's somewhere in that bracket?
High teens, maybe feels kind of something like an achievable score anyway for the guys. I suppose it depends what they want to do. I'm sure they could just like stop watering the greens and just let them get hard and bouncy. But they probably don't. Yeah, they probably, you know, when it's been the first time coming to a course in a long time, you don't want to go be an outlier and kind of set yourself up for a lot of complaints.
No.
So, yeah, you kind of get the feeling that they might just allow the scoring to happen.
Yeah. No, I think you're probably right. There was a reaction between the Woods win in 2002 and the Elves win in 2004. They did toughen it up, and there's commentary about how they there was some deliberate attempts to make it a bit tougher. But even so, 18 under, and again in good conditions, still suggests that you're going to be able to make a score out there. If you're looking through the website this week, the history stats won't include any of the older events because they're too far in the distance. So do bear that in mind. If you go back through some of the old Irish Open winners, back to 2010, Ross Fisher won at 20-1. Simon Dyson won a year after at 25-1. Jamie Donaldson, 66s. Paul Casey won at 50-1 back in 2013. Mikko Ilonen won at 80-1 in 2014. Soren Kjeldsen at 150-1. He's the biggest price winner in this stretch that I'm going to read through here. Rory McIlroy won in 4-1 in 2016. John Rahm, the first of two, the year later at 14-1. Russell Knox, 28-1 in 2018. John Rahm again at 8-1. And then last year at the rearranged event at Galgorm Castle, John Catlin won at 40-1. I guess the problem when you're looking through those old events and the skill stats, and you know, there are some correlations between how players played at various tracks, but some of those are parkland tracks, some of those are links style tracks. So picking anything specific out of Irish Open history is a bit of a minefield this week, because yeah, depending on the conditions, depending on the style of course, the different ways and different methods of getting the job done. But high greens and regulation tends to be a consistent factor in the Irish Open anyway. As to whether that holds true this week on a completely different track, we shall see.
That probably is true. Just interesting on that, like, Paul, because, you know, short game and links is just a little bit trickier with the greens being flat and fast, and just getting the ball to land dead is a bit of an art form. So that kind of the scrambling would hold up in analogy to that.
Yeah, and in tougher years and windy years on linksy tracks, then you know everyone's missing greens, and you know short game can really become the most important factor with it. You've got a number of factors to try and consider when you're going back through the history, and I've not paid a massive amount of attention to it, I must say, because I think there could be too many red herrings in looking at the performances from past Irish Opens. But apart from giving you an idea that players can play well in that part of the world, comparable courses, you're probably looking over in the UK at the kind of tree line tracks, the parkland tracks, which you know, aesthetically there are a number of similarities between that and, you know, some of the Heathland tracks, the Wentworths, and the various other tracks that we've seen at various points over the years. To give you an idea as to players who might enjoy that kind of setup. If you go back through that list of players that I just read through, the only consistent form aspect is that all of those nine players that I read through had finished in the top 10 in one of their last seven starts. In fact, the last three, Russell Knox, John Rahm and John Catlin had all finished either first or second in one of their previous two starts. So the last three all came in with particularly hot form. But historically, if you've got a top 10 in the near recent past, then that seems to set you in good stead coming into an Irish Open. Other factors, only real things to note, I guess. Open qualifying this week, the top three finishers here who are not exempt for the Open Championship will get through if they finish inside the top 10. There's also some local final qualifying happening today at various venues. So I put a link through to those players who are involved this week. None of the players that I've picked are playing in the local qualifying. As to how that would work with the bubble, I'm not entirely sure. So if you want to double check whether your fancy is in action or not, then use the link on my preview to double check that. But yeah, as always, with three places up for grabs for the Open, those players who aren't already in the field have got another little incentive to put a decent shift in this week. The first three that I've picked this week, I've gone for four this week, the first three that I've picked this week are all in that situation. All three of them need to get inside those qualifying positions if they're going to tear up at Royal St George's in a couple of weeks' time. The first of whom is Sam Horsfield, who are back just there at 33-1. He's been tipped up as well alongside my preview. He's been backed in to around about 25-1 right now, but that's probably about the right price, I think, for Horsfield this week. I looked at Rory, I looked at Shane Lowry, I looked at a lot of the players at the top of the market, and if my assertion that you're going to need to make a lot of putts this week, you're going to need to be making a lot of birdies is right, then I think there are enough question marks about some of the guys at the top to scrub them off at the prices on offer. Rory, as we know, when he finds the putter, can be particularly good. And when he won a couple, 4 or 5 weeks or so back on the PGA Tour, that was purely down to the putter. 60th for strokes gained putting, though, at Torrey Pines on his last start really doesn't excite. Shane Lowry, even worse on his last start, 70th out of the 71 players who made the weekend at Torrey Pines in terms of strokes gained putting. And they're both going to need quite considerable improvements, I think, in that stat if they're going to feature here this week at really short prices. And at the prices on offer, you've got to give the guys respect, of course, but at the prices on offer, I can't go near those guys. Horsfield's the one closest to the top of the market I've taken. And if there's one person who can make those birdies, then it is him. He tops that category on the European Tour for the season today. He's also 24 for bogey avoidance. Top 22 for each of par 3, par 4 and par 5 scoring for the season to date. So scoring extremely nicely. Progressive form as well. 49th, 25th and then 5th last week. And that effort last week in Germany could have been much, much better. He opened with a 64. He shot 77 on Friday before recovering and finishing in a tie for 5th. If you look back through his form, it tends to come in these kind of short, sharp bursts of 3 or 4 events. He won twice in the space of 4 events last year. Earlier this year, 8th, 3rd, 15th and 4th over a 4-event stretch before going off the boil. So perhaps 5th last week is at the start of another one of these short, sharp bursts of form. We shall see. But yeah, for me, quite possible that he puts another shift in this week, I think. So that's Horsfield. Andy Sullivan I've backed as well, 33-1 also. 8 places with Corin I took with Andy Sullivan. And there's another player who finished in that logjam for 5th place last week alongside Horsfield, alongside Wiesberger and a number of other players. When he plays well, Sullivan, he can absolutely butcher a field and he can go extremely low. He won at 27 under by 7 shots at Hanbury Manor last year. Historically as well, he won at Villamora at 23 under, which was a 9-shot victory on the bent grass greens over there. So when he finds that putter, when the ball starts finding the back of the cup, then he can go extremely low. Opened with 61 in Dubai in December. He should have won that, really. Just let it slip towards the end of the event there. only missed one cut since, so it's been nice and consistent, and I think he's coming into this with some good progressive form. Decent record in Ireland generally, 6th, 6th and 2nd over the years on linksy tracks. More comparable tracks, 3rd at Wentworth last year, 6th at the Belfry more recently. I should enjoy this, I think, Andy Sullivan. A nice scorable tree line track should be right up his alley. Two longer prices, Adrian Ategui, 80-1, with 8 places with Paddy Power. I mentioned a second ago that players, or the last three winners, had all finished either 1st or 2nd on their last two starts. Only 4 players in the field that I can see fit that criteria. Martin Keimer, Thomas Detry, Jonathan Caldwell and Adrian Ategui. So I've taken a chance on Ategui simply because his best greens in regulation performance for 2 years was in Sweden on his penultimate start. He was 1st for strokes gained approach, 1st for strokes gained tee to green that week. So something's really clicked with his long game. 29th last week overall, but again, his long game looked really, really good. And if he can make a few putts this week, I think he can go really quite close. Not making many mistakes. His bogey avoidance is good. He was the closest player to Andy Sullivan's total back at Hanbury Manor last year. 20 under he shot, attempting to chase Andy Sullivan down. He did win at the Scottish Championship just after that. He opened with a 62 that week. He closed with a 63. He's shot a couple of 64s recently as well. So there's some good scoring going on. He seems to be in good nick, Adrian Ategui, for an 80-1 shot. And finally, I've backed Aaron Rye 125-1. He's been backed in. There's still a little bit of 125-1, but I suspect he's going to go off near 80-1, something like that. So if you fancy Aaron Rye, I wouldn't hang about with that. For me, that's just simply the wrong price for a guy of his ability. He won a Rolex Series event in Scotland last year. Was 2nd in this corresponding fixture last year at Galgorham Castle. It's not been great so far in 2021. I mean, you only have to look down his results to see that. But the highlight, 18th, the WGC Workday, is far better than a lot of the players here can boast on their CV for the season today. And just a few flashes of form in his last start in Sweden. Shot a 67 and 68 in 2 of the rounds. 8th for strokes gained approach. And also strokes gained positive for his putting for the first time in 6 starts. So just some little signs with Aaron Rye that he's starting to find some form, and happy to take a chance at a 3-figure price on a player of his calibre. Just to recap, Aaron Rye, Adrian Ategui, Andy Sullivan and Sam Horsfield for me this week. Any fancies from you, Barry?
I've kind of gone down the just looking at guys who are playing well, but also who've had a little bit of success on the Parkland tracks. And one that kind of caught my eye was Callum Hill, who was 8th at the Belfry a few weeks back, and has been playing some pretty decent golf. Played the Irish Open last year, so finished 28th. So he's not allergic to playing here in Ireland. So I took him at 50-1. Niall Carney have backed, who's striking the ball great last week. No reason to believe why that wouldn't continue. 150-1, 8 places is very tempting in a not super strong European Tour field. And then the other one, which I don't know, it's a total shot in the dark because he could just as easily go missing this week, but Victor Dubuisson had a really good week last week. Does not get on well with the Irish Open, has just got a rake of missed cuts, but I'm hoping that a Parkland track might suit him a little bit better. So 80-1 just felt like a fun punt for somebody that was hitting it very well last week. And then no comments so far. I heard Steve grunt.
No. Perhaps De Brisson fancies a new fishing rod or boat or something. And
well, he's in a great spot of the part of the country for that. So he just could be,
he'll put a shift in for a couple of weeks and fund his next venture.
Yeah, exactly. And I took a little flyer on Takumi Kanaya, who was 17th last week. He's had a win this year on one of the Japanese tour events. And super talented guy, 60-61. So I just, because of the, I'd say, lack of familiarity on recent tour events at this course, I decided to kind of stay away from the shorter prices. Just too much, too many unknowns there. But it wouldn't surprise me to see Keimer go well again this week. So hard to know about Rory, but what Rory shows up this week. He's playing next week as well, so he's it looks like that appears to be a plan to get the game kind of firing on all cylinders, getting into the Open Championship. Shane's hitting the ball very well tee to green. It's, if he can get that putter to cooperate, he's just going to be so dangerous.
He was excellent at the US Open tee to green, wasn't he? Again, the putter was very, very bulky.
Yeah, really
I mean, you and I were following him because we were both on him. But yeah, tee to green, he was still playing very nicely.
Yeah,
couldn't make a putt for Toffee.
He must be tearing his hair out.
No, going back to Callum Hill, he was impossible for me to shift from the predictor this week. So statistically, he fits very, very nicely. Noel Carney, I was very close to backing him as well as one of the longest shots, so I can see exactly where you're coming from. It was decent last week. I know at one point he had a couple of shots lead, and it's difficult to maintain that when you're looking for your big breakthrough. But there's something there, isn't there? He finished third a few weeks prior to that as well, from memory. There's something percolating with Carney. I wish you luck with those bets this week. Anything? I know you've been slaving over your Rocket Mortgage preview, Steve. Did anything catch your eye at any point?
Well, I wonder what Richard Bland turns up, because if it's the Richard Bland for the first two days of the US Open, 80-1 seems like a very good price.
Yeah.
I don't know with Bland. Is Richard Bland just going to disappear into nothingness again? Or where does he go from here? Well, this is the question, isn't it? Where does he go? Does he keep the good play content? I mean, you look at Bland's second in the 02 Irish Open. He finished second in a Challenger back in 2008, 10th in the 2009 Irish Open, and 5th in 2010. So he's come across to Ireland plenty of times and had some really good success. And those first 2 days at the US Open, he was outstanding. I mean, the whole world were Dickie Bland. Who's this Dickie Bland chap? You know, people on the European Tour can play decent golf. It's shocking, I know. It's shocking, I know, for a lot of our North American listeners. But even when they're 48. And then, of course, it all got too much for him. But that's kind of what you expect. But he's playing the best golf probably of his career. And I just think 80-1, that's a good price with Unibet.
It's an interesting thing, like looking back at just the WGC leaderboards, there's a real mix of styles of golfers and lengths of golfers off the tee. So I think this week is kind of wide open for most people to contend.
So hopefully it's one of those tracks where it doesn't matter if you're a bomber or 265 off the tee. If your game's in good shape, you can contend.
There's a lot of
decent players in there, which I think are after him. Marcus Armitage won the other week. He's up there at 70-1. There's Joost Luiten at 60-1. You could build a case around Joost's toast, really, couldn't you?
Yep.
I've just noticed Thomas Dietrich's playing in a Open Championship qualifier this morning. He's one under par.
Some of these guys
That's not great prep, is it? Because he'll be arriving in Ireland tonight.
Yes. Yeah, he was tomorrow, one of the guys that I mentioned who'd finished inside the top two in one of his previous two starts. So, you know, he ticks that box if you want to get down as specific as that. But yeah, some of these guys have got to play their qualifier today, then get back into the bubble somehow. And I'm not entirely sure how they square that off the European Tour, but that's for them to resolve, not me. There's a lot you could build a case. Joost Luiten was the last of my list, Steve, so I really don't want him to win this week, but I could see him going well. He's he's been finding a lot of greens in regulation for the last three starts for himself. And if that putter, if he puts just even half decently with his approach play, he could go well this week. So yeah, I could see Yost featuring.
I think at the top, you know, McIlroy, Lowry, Fleetwood, Kiemer. I mean, I personally would be taking Martin Kiemer at 20-1 over someone like Fleetwood, who's as short as 12-1. I mean, that's a ridiculous price on Tommy Fleetwood. That's kind of where... And Christian Bezuidenhout, who he's been playing some excellent golf. I mean, he's contending in the last two majors. So yeah, it's a good event. I think it's going to be a fascinating tournament this week. Did you mention, I think Justin Thomas is playing Scottish Open as well?
He is, yeah. Thomas, yeah, yeah. There's a cracking field next week. It's the Renaissance Club.
Is that the course where they were shooting like 35 under par the first year they went there?
I'm not sure it's the most appropriate of preparations for the Open, but it is aesthetically linksy, so it gets people a bit of... sea salt in the nostrils, as you describe it, and get some thinking about the way to approach a linksy style track the following week. But yeah, I think it'll be a little bit easier than it will be when they get to Sandwich the following week.
Yeah, let's hope for a bit of wind at Royal St George's. That'll sort a few of them out. Indeed. I think it's going to be slightly different at Royal St George's in a fortnight to what we've got at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. If there was ever a PGA Tour tournament title, the Rocket Mortgage Classic is the kind of archetypal one. Detroit Golf Club, Detroit, Michigan. So we're upstate United States. They've played this twice and they have ripped. This you love these kind of tournaments, Barry. You absolutely love them, don't you? 25 under par for Nate Lashley and 23 under par for Bryson last year. I don't even think they need to be getting the fire trucks out this week because it's been hammering down in Detroit. So I think the course will be soft enough before they get there. So I don't think there's any requirement for the local Detroit fire hide tenders to get down to the course and water those greens.
They might need them out there with the pumps to take a bit of the water away from the fairways. No mud balls. Well, so they might preemptively do lift clean in place just for the whole week.
Yeah, I could see that.
Just to make sure everybody could shoot 30 under.
There was another 13 mil of rain overnight. I noticed when I was up at 5 a.m. this morning. And there's also forecasts for more rain today. So it instantly said to me, Charlie Hoffman. So Charlie's in the team, soft golf course. He does like to destroy a soft golf course. But yes, there's no wind either. So it's just going to be taken apart. But there's a kind of... You look at Nate Lashley... and you look at Bryson DeChambeau, they're kind of poles apart. And the first time they played this in 19, you had lots of shorter hitters towards the top of the leaderboard. And then last year, it was an absolute bomber's paradise with Bryson DeChambeau and Matthew Wolff basically heading the scoring. And you also had a situation where I think it was one of the highest average driving distance golf courses on the PGA Tour last year. I mean, you even had Webb Simpson 305 yards off the tee. I think it might be slightly different, though, because the last 2 years it has been the fairways are wide here. They've basically been dry. So you've had the worst possible mix where you've got fairways that are running and greens that are soft and receptive. So they've literally just ripped the golf course apart. I think this year you might have a situation, as you said, you might even have lift, clean and place in situ this week. There might be less run on the fairways, which may actually work almost probably more for the bombers, where they can just get it out there as far as they can and have that advantage with no run on those fairways. There is thunderstorms potentially throughout the whole week. So I don't see this course getting firm or at all much run on the fairways whatsoever. They say it's 4-inch rough, but as we saw last year with Bryson and Matthew Wolf, they were just hacking it out the rough with no problems at all, getting onto the greens. It's pretty nondescript, really. It's a classical golf course. It's tight, it's tree line, but the key elements here are wide fairways, receptive greens, and you've got no water on the course apart from one hole. And it's only 7,370 yards, which for a par 72 these days, it's not stretching them. So for me, I've been very much looking into players that are positive on Poana greens, because again, we've got Poana greens in play this week. Very few bent grass green golf courses now on the PGA Tour. If you think it through. So far, we've only had, shoot me if I've missed one, bent grass greens. I think we've only had Augusta and Colonial so far. Every other golf, and Muirfield Village, because they reseeded the greens to pure bent grass. Lot of power, and as we know, Bermuda just seems to be virtually every week. We're now upstate and we're getting a mix, Poana and bent grass, 80% Poana, 20% bent grass this week. So similar greens to what we saw at the Travellers. But that, for me, gives me a leaning. I'm looking for players that we know are comfortable out in California, out on those Poa golf courses. Bryson, of course, California guy, won this last year. Nate Lashley has gone on to finish fifth at Pebble Beach. He won this at 250 to 1 in 2019. You'll like this, Barry. He was an alternate. He literally got in the day before the tournament.
What could you possibly be hinting at, Steve?
Well, one of the reasons I delayed my tips was because I wanted to see if Seamus Power got into the field, because he's fourth alternate.
He didn't play the qualifier yesterday. He was down to play it, and he didn't play it. So he must have got a little bit of a tip off that he's going to get in. Because when I looked yesterday, when the odds were starting to come out, he was fourth alternate. And now you're saying Peter Uihlein is first alternate, and Peter was third yesterday. So I think things are ticking over. And
yeah, they've taken Mito Pereira, haven't they? And Ben Martin was playing yesterday and made the playoff at the qualifier. And then they pulled him off out of the playoff and said, oh, by the way, you've got him. You're in. So forget about this. Get yourself up to Detroit. So that now leaves Peter Uihlein as the first alternate and Seamus Power as the second.
It's happening.
Now, I reckon I saw Rob Bolton tweet out the other day that there were three sponsors invites, and from what I've seen from his Twitter account, they've only filled one. So you might find they might even just give Uihlein and Seamus Power the two sponsors invites, get them into the field. Now, Seamus Power is playing golf from the gods, and across my 8-week trackers, if he doesn't play this week, John Deere Classic he'll get into, because it's not as good a field. I'm all over him like a dirty I'm all over him like a rash next week up at the John Deere Classic. But yeah, I mean, I'd have loved to have put Power in my tips this week, but as he's not in the field yet, I can't do that. What I will say is, if he is a late entry, he is the sort. You know, something sub 20 under par.
Low scoring.
That is low scoring. He's got plenty of pop off the tee, isn't he? That to me is far more Seamus Power this week and next week than it was at the Travellers, where it's gusting 20-25 mile an hour over the weekend. And he was still in the mix when it was actually scorable early doors, wasn't it? So yeah, Seamus Power would be one to watch out for. What do you reckon they price him up at, 100 to 1, something like that?
I hope so, yeah, because he was over 100 last week, so you know, I think that he slipped down out of like the top 10 radar. If he'd been in the top 10, he'd be in this week already. So hopefully he stays under the radar.
Yeah. The only thing the bookmakers will know is that he went off in the third last group at this the Rocket Mortgage last year. So he clearly got on very nicely with the course. Anyway, one to keep an eye on.
Listen, a winning price is a winning price. You know, we've discovered this recently. You know, even if they are short, so
he's not going to be any shorter than 80 to 90 to 1, is he? He can't be, really.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. I'd be all over it. Yeah, it's difficult to find. As I said, when you've got Nate Lashley and Bryson DeChambeau, they are literally poles apart, the two. The winners here. I put this in the preview. Linking Bryson and Nate from a playing style perspective is difficult, nigh impossible. Both, though, were highly ranked in terms of strokes gained on approach arriving in Michigan. And both renewals also highlight that strokes gained putting was the key to victory. Nate Lashley gained over 2 strokes per round from tee to green, but outscored that with his putter, 2.33 strokes gained putting per round. DeChambeau, 1.82 strokes gained tee to green, outscored that with his putter, 1.96. And that is rare, it has to be said, on the PGA Tour, where putting and the amount of strokes gained actually outweigh what you do from tee to green. I'll just give you an example. Last week, Harris English, who won the Travelers, gained 2 strokes per round tee to green, and less than a stroke with the putter. So the worst statistic known to man in terms of trying to preempt his strokes gained putting. So good luck if you can find the guys that are going to putt best on the greens. I mean, I'll take you through the top 12 of the last 8 weeks. Hadwin and Landry at 12, Higo at 11, Doc Redman at 10, Adam Long, Hunter Mahan and John Pack at 7. Troy Merritt at 6. I had a good look at Merritt. He's playing good golf. Cam Davis at 5. Kevin Kisner at 4. Jason Kokrag at 3. Can Jason make it 3 PGA Tour wins this season? Ryan Gibson and Satoshi Kodaira have been the best putters over the last 8 weeks. I'm not sure it's that simple. Kisner, of course, could be the kind. He finished 3rd here last year. Finished very, very fast last week. Was it 63 on Sunday? 7 mm-hmm. under? Backdoor? I don't know who you bet, but I wouldn't be surprised if you're on Kisner this week, Barrett, because you do like a bit of Kevin Kisner.
Yeah, I'm kind of in between. I had a look. The long game wasn't amazing. Yeah, it wasn't. The putter was the thing that was firing, and that's funny because that's what he was struggling with for a while. The long game is fine, so maybe he's kind of like on a seesaw moment, you know, long game versus putter, and then, yeah, he finds it. But
I'll go in reverse order where I'm at. I'll tell you a guy that played really nicely last week, and I always watch out for this particular individual. He's not a big name, gets overlooked most weeks, but Andrew Putnam. I remember him winning the Barracuda Championship back in 2018, up at the Montreux Golf Club that they used to play, or Country Club, whatever, I can't remember. It was a Jack Nicklaus design. It's the one they used to play, or they still play it, but they've moved it to a different golf course. But the one they play in Reno, and that's the tournament they play on the Stableford Modified, and he, you know, you've got to be shooting a ridiculously low amount of, you know, high birdies and eagles to win that. He won that in 2018. And he won that off the top 10 the week before in Canada. And when you look at Putnam, he is the sort that likes these kind of Poana, bentgrass greens. I also tipped him up 2019 Sony Open. He came second that week at 80-1 to Matt Kuchar. Give him a short course. Give him something that's scorable. I think Putnam's very streaky. So far this year, he's finished 7th in Phoenix, 5th in Puerto Rico, and 4th at Bay Hill. And then last week at TPC River Highlands, he shot 8 under across Friday to Sunday. So last 54 holes, he was T7 in the field. He finished with a 66 to climb to 13th spot overall. sixth for strokes, sixth for greens in reg, love that. Fourth for strokes gained on approach, and 15th for strokes gained tee to green. So I thought 150 to 1, eight places each way this week on Andrew Putnam was a very decent shout. He's the sort, you know, Putnam, who can be dog awful for long, long periods of time. And then he just finds something, be it the putter or his approach game, and he just strings together a couple of nice results. So I could see Putnam in the mix this week at a golf course that is going to yield a lot of birdies. So yeah, I'm on board eight places each way, 150 to 1 with Betfred on Andrew Putnam. Taking that Californian angle, Maverick McNealy. You look at McNealy and you look closely at his schedule. He's very, very selective about where he plays. He's not one of these players that kind of chases the big tournaments and plays, you know, invitationals. I don't know. He seems to be, I mean, Travelers Championship, Charles Schwab. He plays the Heritage. Honda, I mean, he plays the Honda Classic. Now, most American golfers, you know, they'll go anywhere but play the Honda Classic. Riviera. He seems to be the Pebble Beach every year. He's very selective about where he likes to play. And his results are quite selective as well. A lot of where he plays well seems to me to be very Poana positive. You know, I'm seeing a fifth at Pebble Beach in 2020, a 15th at Torrey Pines in 2020. Bear in mind, he grew up in Stanford and went to Stanford Uni. It kind of makes sense with the Poana angle, clearly Californian. He was eighth here last year, where he was third for strokes gained putting. And then since then, seventh at the Barracuda Championship. That's, again, they play that now at Old Greenford. That featured Ben and Poana mixed greens. Second at Pebble Beach this year, which was the one that really took my attention. He was the guy that ran Daniel Berger the closest that particular week. Again, I know there's a set of three courses, but in the main, they're 72s. They're 7,000 yards. They're short. They're attackable. He also finished fourth at Harbortown in April. Again, another tight course. That one features Bermuda grass. But he was fifth for strokes gained putting that particular week. And then last two outings, he's fired in some quite low rounds. 20th at the Charles Schwab Challenge. That featured a second round 63. And then last week, he hit the straps by going low in round one. He shot a 65 in round one, fourth best round of the day. And the thing that's got me with McNealy is it's just the fact that it doesn't really come through in his strokes gained numbers, although he was first for strokes gained off the tee last week, which is always a great sign. He can get it out there as well. He's like a three. He's averaging 305, 306 off the tee. So he's not sure. He's got plenty of power, McNealy, for quite a. He's not the biggest of builds. But I just love the way he's hitting the ball recently. 12th for total driving, 19th for greens and reg, 13th for ball striking at Colonial. And then last week, 2nd for total driving, 15th for greens and reg, 2nd for ball striking. Best driver of the golf course last week. Tie that in. If he can keep though that tee to green game going this week and putt like he can do on Poana, which seems to be a very favourable putting surface for him, I think he'll go very well this week. 70 to 1 I got with him, eight places each way, with Coral, who Paul mentioned earlier, have got this enhanced. Bet £5, €5, get £30 or euro free bets plus the 33 spins offer. Available at our website, this week. Key terms and conditions, of course, available at Golf Betting System. And it closes Wednesday evening, that enhanced sign-up deal. But McNealy, yes. Putnam and McNealy are the ones that I've gone with first off the bat. Let me bring you two in. Who are you gone for at triple digits or bigger prices?
How did you guess? I arrived at McNealy myself last night as well for, let's go with your reasons. They're a lot better than mine. And so,
what was your reason?
I've hacked into your computer and saw what you're doing. Do you know what? I can't remember. I was just flying along, doing a bit of research, popping around the place.
He's just been flashing low numbers, hasn't he? And so, if this is a golf course that's going to suit longer hitters this week, I don't think his lack of length or the fact that he gained almost 5 strokes off the tee last week, they're not going to hurt his chances, are they? He's clearly very, very confident with the driver right now. So, yeah, I think that. And he just clearly, Californian lad, I think this golf course, low scoring, Poana Greens, is just going to, it's like a home away from home, really.
I think that's what it was. I was actually playing with the predictor model, and that he just popped up in the model I put together. So yeah, I'll take it. I've just done up another predictor model here, and he's not showing it at all. So that's, I guess that's built into the price, right?
We're not charging you though. Every time you run that predictor model, it's all free of charge at Golf Betting System. So
you can get all these different results. Yeah. Yeah,
you can confuse yourself silly. All
very,
free of
very
charge.
Very easily. Yeah. And a couple of long shots. I Patton Kizzire. I know he's had an awful last few weeks, but he can just pop up out of nowhere, and kind of tends to go well at these low-scoring affairs. So took a flyer on him. I think I got him at 125. No, 100 to 1. And, I'm flipping around whether to back Kisner or not. I don't know. I'm definitely waiting for Seamus to get into the field. That's 100% happening, so.
I'd say the one that I came closest to adding at another big price, 150 to 1 out there right now, Bo Hosler. He started to play. Bo Hosler is kind of behind the eight ball in the FedEx Cup, and if you're not in the top 125 or 150 at least, you're getting booted down to the Corn Ferry this time around. And it's noticeable with Bo that all of a sudden he started to play. I know you like Bo. I wouldn't be surprised if you were going to mention him, Paul. He played very, very nicely at the Travellers.
Yeah, no, I'm not on him, but I can see the logic. He does like an event where he can get his magic wand working nicely. Fantastic putter, isn't he? So
he's another one to keep your eye on for the John Deere Classic next week. I think Bo Hosler. So I expect he finishes top 5 this week and destroys his price for next week.
Isn't it amazing how that happens, though, when a guy really needs a good result to just solidify his card? He might get up there into the lead, but, you know, ultimately it feels like a third or a fourth place finish is what kind of ends up settling on, which is still fine if he's 150 to 1 and you're not getting
that place chopped. That's exactly what happened with Cramer Hickok last week, wasn't it? No, Hickok. I think Hickok was way outside the 125, and now all of a sudden he's got, you know, fair play to him. He's got his playing credentials. They're all sorted out for the next 12 months, aren't they? He's on the PGA Tour.
And
Hosler, just for reference, Bo for reference is 150 in the FedEx Cup, and you throw away the last couple of weeks where he's been playing half decent. He's probably down in the 170s. He was nowhere. All of a sudden, again, another Californian. I could see Bo going extremely well this week. The other three I've backed, I've already mentioned Charlie Hoffman. He's kind of self-explanatory, isn't he? Just playing great golf. Loves soft golf courses. Long off the tee. He's always been the sort where if you... I used to call him a desert rat, a bit like a Kevin Na. All those desert tournaments where you used to shoot 25, 27 under par to even make the top 10. Hoffman was always a kind of fixture. The other one you could add to that would be Scott Piercy. He's 200 to 1 this week, Piercy. Piercy's another, you know. How long has Scott Piercy been on the PGA Tour? He's outside the 125. And he's been flashing some numbers, hasn't he? He was first for strokes going tee to green a few outings ago, Scott Piercy. Finished like top 20. Couldn't putt. And then he withdrew. There's injury problems. That's the thing with him. At some point, though, Piercy needs to do something. Otherwise, he's losing his PGA Tour card. And he's a good player, Piercy, on his day. This is the kind of event he'll like. Anyway, 1.5 points each way, 40 to 1. I got with was it Boyle Sports? No, it wasn't Boyle Sports, was it? In the end,
Coral. Yeah.
Coral, we got with. Yeah, Charlie Hoffman. I've gone for bad back, Jason Day. 33 to 1. I thought 33 to 1 on Jason Day in this field was a good price. He was actually 40 to 1 with William Hill on first show, which I knew wouldn't hang around, and it didn't. But when you're seeing Skybet at 22 to 1 on Jason Day, and you're seeing William Hill on the same 8 place terms at 40 to 1, you realise that Skybet don't want to take any money on Jason Day, and I can kind of see why, because in this field on a soft golf course, a lot of the stuff I think Jason Day says is almost like a smokescreen, and we should know over the years. I know he's not world number one. He's not at the kind of levels that he was playing in 2015, but he was mighty impressive last week if you actually looked at his numbers. And actually, 2015, he won in Canada, Wisconsin, New Jersey and Illinois. Well, this week we're in Michigan. So he just loves this kind of latitude in terms of North America. He's great on Poana Greens. He's a two-time winner, of course, at Torrey Pines. He goes top fives Pebble Beach every single year. If he's actually into a positive mental state and he's actually believing in what he's talking in his interviews, i.e. he's playing well, he's really, really digging in to make sure that he gets a decent spot in the FedEx Cup playoffs, which is what he kept saying last week. He's down 100th in the FedEx Cup. He jumped 10 spots last week with that top 10 finish at River Highlands. But his numbers last week were just incredible. Fifth for driving distance. He was lashing it. He was 14th for driving accuracy, which is not easy around River Highlands. First for total driving, 7th for greens in reg, 1st for ball striking, and 2nd for all-round in the all-round category. And that 1st for total driving was the first time he topped total driving since the 2015 PGA Championship. That's pretty mad. 7 years, that was his best driving performance.
Yeah, something percolating.
And I remember a few months ago, Jason Day was barely getting it 275 off the tee, which would suggest he really had trouble with his back then. Or he'd go, who knows what Jason Day's up to? But if you're backing players based upon their ceiling and their odds, yesterday 40 to 1 on Jason Day, a 12-time PGA Tour winner and major champion, ex-world number one. If you were backing his ceiling, that price just had to be back. So I'm on at 33, which I think is a decent price in this field. If he plays anywhere near the tee to green game he was playing last week, I just can't see Jason Day not being in the mix, unless, of course, he withdraws pre-event with a bad back or during the event with a bit of hay fever or whatever comes along, because he does like a WD. But at least I'm not backing him at 16 to 1 like I did with Paul Casey last week. So I took the 33s on Jason Day. And the other one I took, and you just don't know what side of the bed this guy is getting out of. You'll know within the first 9 holes whether he's going to miss the cut. But if Matthew Wolf actually turns up and plays the kind of buccaneering golf that he can play, and what he did play here last year, I think 33 to 1 about Matt Wolf's a decent price as well.
Steve, have you laminated that Casey post-it note? I mean, it has to be over now. The fascination.
I thought he must have listened to the podcast last week. I mean, four under through the front nine, and you're thinking, oh, Paul, yeah, man, we're in. Then he four bogey, was it five bogeys on the dut on the back nine, and people are mumbling he's got a bad back. But he continued to play. He was fourth last week for strokes gained tee to green, and he lost 5.5 strokes on the greens, Paul Gazin. Amazing.
Yeah, he's never the most reliable on the greens anyway, is he? But that's pretty poor, isn't it?
So, yeah, I've gone for Wolf, who, you know, at the top of this betting, he won the 3M Open in 2019, his third ever professional golf tournament. And if he turns up and he's right and he's positive and he plays as well as he did from tee to green at the US Open, and he was putting magnificently well at the US Open. Again, another Californian, Poana Greens. I could see Wolf on a soft golf course ripping this place apart as well. But, as I said, within the first 6 to 9 holes, you'll know if he's going to shoot 5 over and miss the cut, or actually he's checked out mentally and isn't playing this week. That's absolutely all over the place.
Still gives you time to catch... catch a few like Thursday bets with the extended places. If he ejects early, you can add on another bet.
Yeah, but Wolf's the kind. If he's 2 over through 3, just don't back him because it's only going. He just doesn't pull it round.
I'm not saying double down on him. I'm saying you could go back somebody else.
Oh, go and back somebody else. Yes,
but that's. I mean, in a way,
back wacky. Going back wacky Neiman, yeah. Or something like that. But yes.
In a way, it's kind of good that he's binary like that, because you don't have the hope that kills you, thinking, oh, he could be okay. You know, it's just like, it's like a band-aid just ripped off. He's done for the week. Move swiftly on.
Oh, absolutely. You know, over here in the UK, you know, if he's playing a lunchtime, you know, by about 3:30 in the afternoon, whether you're getting any kind of value with Matthew Wolf. But you've got to say, when he plays good golf, you know, second at the Rocket Mortgage last year, fourth at the PGA, second at the US Open. That's the other thing with Wolf. You look where he plays his best golf, they tend to be the exact same golf courses as Bryson DeChambeau.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the same game, isn't it? It's bang it as far as you can, gouge it out the rough, and they're both decent putters. Very, very good putters.
And probably when the wind is calm as well, seems to match up with when those boys go reasonably well.
Yeah, I get that.
Because they're hitting it so high and so far that if the wind is up, there's more time to affect the ball.
I said in the podcast last week, I was going to auto bet Wolf over the next few weeks because I think he's due a big week at some point because of, you know, he hasn't been playing a lot, blah, blah, blah. This course suits him, but I didn't think Travellers did, because at Travellers, I think you've got to have some element of driving accuracy, and that isn't Matthew Wolf. But this week, I think the fairways are 8 yards wider. There's no water in play, and he can just lash it as far as he wants, especially now it's going to be soft. So, yeah, those are my five. Wolf, Jay Day, Charlie Chuck Hoffman, Maverick McNealy, and the guy that you barely notice, Andrew Putnam. Any others to add, chaps, or first round leader bets? Or
I've not actually placed a bet yet, but there's a few guys that I've looked at in the running.
Ryan Armour,
you are. Ryan Armour, yeah.
Ryan Armour, is he in?
Yeah, potentially Ryan Armour, 8th recently, 4th last year. Sepp Straka's going to be popular, isn't he? 11th and 8th from his two starts here, 10th last week as well. Doc Redmond potentially as well. He was a runner-up here a couple of years ago and runner-up.
They know it though, don't they, with Doc?
Yeah, they do, but yeah.
He's well found out, isn't he? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You know, 55-1 and Sky Bet 45-1. You know, they don't want to take a penny on Doc Redmond.
No, they don't. You talked about Seamus Power getting into the field. The one that I had my eye on before, or when the alternates list came out, was Mito Pereira, who we mentioned a few moments ago. And he's now in the field. He's only just started to be priced up by various bookies, so I'll keep an eye on that. But it looks like he's going to be around about the 100 to 1 or thereabouts mark. But the Chileans won his last two Corn Ferry starts, 21 under and 27 under last time. He also won at 20 under last year. So he loves a low scoring affair, scoring very, very nicely as well. And two wins on the trot and the Corn Ferry. Can he continue that form into the main tour this week? I don't know. It's, stranger things have happened, haven't they?
It's not exactly packed, is it?
No, not really.
As long as he's mentally not, oh, I'm playing on the PGA Tour. He just keeps the golf going, and he's clearly playing outstandingly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was last week you talked about players who can win at a lower level, and three Corn Ferry wins, but also five wins on either the Latino American or the Chilean Tour back in the past as well. So he's got eight wins as a professional to his name. It's
He's pretty lock when he's in contention, then.
Yeah, he's well capable.
One to keep an eye on for next year.
Yeah, quite possibly. Matt Every's playing, so I'll waste some money backing him first round leader as well. But that's by the by, really. But yeah, other than that, I've not spent a great deal of time on it. But yeah, Mito, when there's enough prices to take a view on him, he's got to go in, I think.
Will you or won't you on Kevin Kisner, Baron? That is the question. I just wasn't impressed with his tee to green game last week. It was all putting, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. He's the kind of guy, that I'd say, if the mood strikes him, he could just bring it all, but, you know, turn it on. I mean, if he, like I said, a few weeks ago, he had the long game going. The putter was out, so it's about matching it up in a week. Maybe this is it. I don't know if he can handle the super low scoring. Day on day on day on day. I think this is going to be, you're going to have to be what, like 25 under this week?
I don't know. I remember he won the RSM at 22, didn't he, when he got that first tour victory?
He had a couple of great rounds last week. So, I mean, I might be just completely contradicting myself, but.
Yeah. Don't know.
It's the price. It's the price. That's probably what's got me like trying to convince myself off it.
You've been price proud.
Yeah, not proud, but just, yeah. Damn it, Steve. Just send me a tenner, I'll put on a bet.
What happened to Ricky Fowler last week? We were all smart on Ricky, weren't we? We were sweet, and it just went horribly wrong. Yeah. Nasty.
Yeah,
Treble Eight Sport clearly thought he played really well, because he's 33-1 with Treble Eight Sport this week. My God.
I think he's on the upward trajectory, so one to keep an eye on, I think.
The other one I did think of, and I always bear in mind with you, Paul, you always say bent power greens, Alex Norum. And he finished third at the 3M Open last year. And the 3M Open has quite similar, you know, that's in Minnesota. This is in Michigan. It's a different kind of course because it's more of a kind of water feature course, that one. But there's definite similarities between players that have done well at the 3M Open and players that have done well at this event. And Norum's in the top 12 across my last 8 weeks strokes gained total, current form.
Yeah, something. There's been a few positive signs of him, hasn't there? So, yeah. We shall see.
He is 8th strokes gained current form last 8 weeks, Alex Norum. 20th strokes gained tee to green. I think the thing that put me off him was the fact a lot of the tee to green is around the greens rather than the approach play. Seems to be driving it well, missing greens, and then like playing like Seve Ballesteros around the greens on the greens. But anyway, that might work this week because it's not a very difficult golf course. I think that's us, isn't it? That's the Irish Open and Rocket Mortgage Classic podcast in the can.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
Best of luck. Best of luck to listeners. We will be back next week for the Scottish Open and the John Deere Classic. As I said at the top of the show, would be fantastic. Please leave us your 5-star reviews, your name in the review. I'll read them out at the start of the next week. That would be fantastic. Thanks for your time, and we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.
if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf.